But let's now imagine that, in the case of the linguistic puzzle, we are given two further clues. The theory describing the world, and hence the contents of the box, is supersymmetric, and the contents of the box have the minimum mass consistent with the first clue of having 3 units of charge. Based on the insights of E. Bogolmonyi, Manoj Prasad, and Charles Sommerfeld, physicists have shown that this specification of a tight organizational framework, the framework of supersymmetry, the analog of the English language, and a minimality constraint, minimum mass for a chosen amount of electric charge, the analog of a minimum word length for a chosen number of Ys, implies that the identity of the hidden contents is nailed down uniquely. That is, merely by ensuring that the contents of the box is the lightest it could possibly be and still have the specified charge, physicists showed that its identity is fully established. Constituents of minimum mass for a chosen value of charge are known as BPS states, in honor of their 3 discoverers. The important thing about BPS states is that their properties are uniquely, easily, and exactly determined without resort to a perturbative calculation. This is true regardless of the value of the coupling constants, that is, even if the string coupling constant is large, implying that the perturbative approach is invalid, we are still able to deduce the exact properties of the BPS configurations. The properties are often called non-perturbative masses and charges, since their values transcend the perturbative approximation scheme. For this reason, you can also think of BPS as standing for beyond perturbative states. The BPS properties exhaust only a small part of the full physics of a chosen string theory when its coupling constant is large, but they nonetheless give us a tangible grip on some of its strong coupling characteristics. As the coupling constant in a chosen string theory is increased beyond the realm accessible to perturbation theory, we anchor our limited understanding in the BPS states. Like a few choice words in a foreign tongue, we will find that they will take us quite far. Duality in string theory. Following Witten, let's start with one of the 5 string theories, say the type 1 string, and imagine that all of its 9 space dimensions are flat and unfurled. This, of course, is not at all realistic, but it makes the discussion simpler. We will return to curled-up dimensions shortly. We begin by assuming that the string coupling constant is much less than 1. In this case, perturbative tools are valid, and hence many of the detailed properties of the theory can and have been worked out with accuracy. If we increase the value of the coupling constant, but still keep it a good deal less than 1, perturbative methods can still be used. The detailed properties of the theory will change somewhat. For instance, the numerical values associated with the scattering of one string off another will be a bit different, because multiple loop processes make greater contributions when the coupling constant increases. But beyond these changes in detailed numerical properties, the overall physical content of the theory remains the same, so long as the coupling constant stays in the perturbative realm. As we increase the type 1 string coupling constant beyond the value of 1, perturbative methods become invalid, and so we focus only on the limited set of non-perturbative masses and charges, the BPS states, that are still within our ability to understand. Here is what Witten argued, and later confirmed through joint work with Joe Polchinski of the University of California at Santa Barbara. These strong coupling characteristics of type 1 string theory exactly agree with known properties of heterotic O string theory, when the latter has a small value for its string coupling constant. That is, when the coupling constant of the type 1 string is large, the particular masses and charges that we know how to extract are precisely equal to those of the heterotic O string when its coupling constant is small. This gives us a strong indication that these 2 string theories, which at first sight, like water and ice, seem totally different, are actually dual. It persuasively suggests that the physics of the type 1 theory for large values of its coupling constant is identical to the physics of the heterotic O theory for small values of its coupling constant. Related arguments gave equally persuasive evidence that the reverse is also true. The physics of the type 1 theory for small values of its coupling constant is identical to that of the heterotic O theory for large values of its coupling constant. Although the two-string theories appear to be unrelated when analyzed using the perturbative approximation scheme, we now see that each transforms into the other, somewhat like the transmutation between water and ice, as their coupling constants are varied in value. This central new kind of result, in which the strong coupling physics of one theory is described by the weak coupling physics of another theory, is known as strong-weak duality. As with the other dualities discussed previously, it tells us that the two theories involved are not actually distinct. Rather, they give two dissimilar descriptions of the same underlying theory. Unlike the English-Chinese trivial duality, strong-weak coupling duality is powerful. When the coupling constant of one member of a dual pair of theories is small, we can analyze its physical properties using well-developed perturbative tools. If the coupling constant of the theory is large, however, and thus the perturbative methods break down, we now know that we can use the dual description, a description in which the relevant coupling constant is small, and return to the use of perturbative tools. The translation has resulted in our having quantitative methods to analyze a theory we initially thought to be beyond our theoretical abilities. Actually proving that the strong coupling physics of the type 1 string theory is identical to the weak coupling physics of the heterotic O theory, and vice versa, is an extremely difficult task that has not yet been achieved. The reason is simple. One member of the pair of the supposedly dual theories is not amenable to perturbative analysis, as its coupling constant is too big. This prevents direct calculations of many of its physical properties. In fact, it is precisely this point that makes the proposed duality so potent, for, if true, it provides a new tool for analyzing a strongly coupled theory. Use perturbative methods on its weakly coupled dual description. But even if we cannot prove that the two theories are dual, the perfect alignment between those properties we can extract with confidence provides extremely compelling evidence that the conjectured strong-weak coupling relationship between the type 1 and heterotic O string theories is correct. In fact, increasingly clever calculations that have been performed to test the proposed duality have all resulted in positive results. Most string theorists are convinced that the duality is true. Following the same approach, one can study the strong coupling properties of another of the remaining string theories, say, the type 2B string. As originally conjectured by Hull and Townsend and supported by the research of a number of physicists, something equally remarkable appears to occur. As the coupling constant of the type 2B string gets larger and larger, the physical properties that we are still able to understand appear to match up exactly with that of the weakly coupled type 2B string itself. In other words, the type 2B string is self-dual. Specifically, detailed analysis persuasively suggests that if the type 2B coupling constant were larger than 1, and if we were to change its value to its reciprocal, whose value therefore is less than 1, the resulting theory is absolutely identical to the one we started with. Similar to what we found in trying to squeeze a circular dimension to a sub-Planck scale length, if we try to increase the type 2B coupling to a value larger than 1, the self-duality shows that the resulting theory is precisely equivalent to the type 2B string with a coupling smaller than 1. A summary, so far. Let's see where we are. By the mid-1980s, physicists had constructed 5 different superstring theories. In the approximation scheme of perturbation theory, they all appear to be distinct. But this approximation method is valid only if the string coupling constant in a given string theory is less than 1. The expectation has been that physicists should be able to calculate the precise value of the string coupling constant in any given string theory, but the form of the approximate equations currently available makes this impossible. For this reason, physicists aim to study each of the five string theories for a range of possible values of their respective coupling constants, both less than and greater than one, i.e., both weak and strong coupling. But traditional perturbative methods give no insight into the strong coupling characteristics of any of the string theories. Recently, by making use of the power of supersymmetry, physicists have learned how to calculate some of the strong coupling properties of a given string theory. And to the surprise of most everyone in the field, the strong coupling properties of the heterotic O string appear to be identical to the weak coupling properties of the type 1 string, and vice versa. Moreover, the strong coupling physics of the type 2B string is identical to its own properties when its coupling is weak. These unexpected links encourage us to follow Witten and press on to the other two string theories, type 2A and heterotic E, to see how they fit into the overall picture. Here we will find even more exotic surprises. To prepare ourselves, we need a brief historical digression. Supergravity. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, before the surge of interest in string theory, many theoretical physicists sought a unified theory of quantum mechanics, gravity, and the other forces in the framework of point-particle quantum field theory. The hope was that the inconsistencies between point-particle theories involving gravity and quantum mechanics would be overcome by studying theories with a great deal of symmetry. In 1976, Stanley Desser and Bruno Zumino, working at CERN, and independently, Daniel Friedman, Sergio Ferrara, and Peter van Nieuwenhuizen, all then of the State University of New York at Stony Brook, discovered that the most promising were those involving supersymmetry, since the tendency of bosons and fermions to give canceling quantum fluctuations helps to calm the violent microscopic frenzy. The authors coined the term supergravity to describe supersymmetric quantum field theories that try to incorporate general relativity. Such attempts to merge general relativity with quantum mechanics ultimately met with failure. Nevertheless, as mentioned in Chapter 8, there was a prescient lesson to be learned from these investigations, one that presaged the development of string theory. The lesson, which perhaps became most clear through the work of Eugene Cremer, Bernard Julia, and Schurk, all of the École Normale Supérieure in 1978, was that the attempts that came closest to success were supergravity theories formulated not in four dimensions, but in more. Specifically, the most promising were the versions calling for 10 or 11 dimensions, with 11 dimensions, it turns out, being the maximal possible. Contact with four observed dimensions was accomplished in the framework, once again, of Kaluza and Klein. The extra dimensions were curled up. In the 10-dimensional theories, as in string theory, 6 dimensions were curled up, while 7 were curled up for the 11-dimensional theory. When string theory took physicists by storm in 1984, the perspective on point-particle supergravity theories changed dramatically. As emphasized repeatedly, if we examine a string with the precision available currently and for the foreseeable future, it looks like a point particle. We can make this informal remark precise. When studying low-energy processes in string theory, those processes that do not have enough energy to probe the ultramicroscopic, extended nature of the string, we can approximate a string by a structureless point particle using the framework of point-particle quantum field theory. We cannot use this approximation when dealing with short-distance or high-energy processes because we know that the extended nature of the string is crucial to its ability to resolve the conflicts between general relativity and quantum mechanics that a point-particle theory cannot. But at low enough energies, large enough distances, these problems are not encountered, and such an approximation is often made for the sake of calculational convenience. The quantum field theory that most closely approximates string theory in this manner is none other than 10-dimensional supergravity. The special properties of 10-dimensional supergravity discovered in the 1970s and 1980s are now understood to be low-energy relics of the underlying power of string theory. Researchers studying 10-dimensional supergravity had uncovered the tip of a very deep iceberg, the rich structure of superstring theory. In fact, it turns out that there are four different 10-dimensional supergravity theories that differ in details regarding the precise way in which supersymmetry is incorporated. Three of these turn out to be the low-energy point particle approximations to the type 2A string, the type 2B string, and the heterotic E string. The fourth gives the low-energy point particle approximation to both the type 1 string and the heterotic O string. In retrospect, this was the first indication of the close connection between these two string theories. This is a very tidy story, except that 11-dimensional supergravity seems to have been left out in the cold. String theory, formulated in 10 dimensions, appears to have no room for an 11-dimensional theory. For a number of years, the general view held by most but not all string theorists was that 11-dimensional supergravity was a mathematical oddity without any connection to the physics of string theory. Glimmers of M-theory. The view now is very different. At Strings 95, Witten argued that if we start with the type 2A string and increase its coupling constant from a value much less than 1 to a value much greater than 1, the physics we are still able to analyze, essentially that of the BPS-saturated configurations, has a low-energy approximation that is 11-dimensional supergravity. When Witten announced this discovery, it stunned the audience and it has since rocked the string theory community. For almost everyone in the field, it was a completely unexpected development. Your first reaction to this result may echo that of most experts in the field. How can a theory specific to 11 dimensions be relevant to a different theory in 10? The answer is of deep significance. To understand it, we must describe Witten's result more precisely. Actually, it's easier first to illustrate a closely related result discovered later by Witten and a postdoctoral fellow at Princeton University, Peter Horava, that focuses on the heterotic E string. They found that the strongly coupled heterotic E string also has an 11-dimensional description. Imagine a heterotic E string coupling constant to be much smaller than 1. This is the realm that we have been describing in previous chapters and that string theorists have studied for well over a decade. Then picture sequentially increasing the size of the coupling constant. Prior to 1995, string theorists knew that this would make the loop processes increasingly important and, as the coupling constant got larger, would ultimately invalidate the whole perturbative framework. But what no one suspected is that as the coupling constant is made larger, a new dimension becomes visible. This is the vertical dimension. Bear in mind that we are now imagining all 9 spatial dimensions of the heterotic E string. Thus, the new vertical dimension represents a 10th spatial dimension, which together with time takes us to a total of 11 spacetime dimensions. Moreover, this example illustrates a profound consequence of this new dimension. The structure of the heterotic E string changes as this dimension grows. It is stretched from a one-dimensional loop into a ribbon, and then a deformed cylinder as we increase the size of the coupling constant. In other words, the heterotic E string is actually a two-dimensional membrane whose width is controlled by the size of the coupling constant. For over a decade, string theorists have always used perturbative methods that are firmly rooted in the assumption that the coupling constant is very small. As argued by Witten, this assumption has made the fundamental ingredients look and behave like one-dimensional strings, even though they actually have a hidden second spatial dimension. By relaxing the assumption that the coupling constant is very small and considering the physics of the heterotic E string when the coupling constant is large, the second dimension becomes manifest. This realization does not invalidate any of the conclusions we have drawn in previous chapters, but it does force us to see them within a new framework. For instance, how does this all mesh with the one time and nine space dimensions required by string theory? Well, recall from Chapter 8 that this constraint arises from counting the number of independent directions in which a string can vibrate, and requiring that this number be just right to ensure that quantum mechanical probabilities have sensible values. The new dimension we have just uncovered is not one in which a heterotic E string can vibrate, since it is a dimension that is locked within the structure of the strings themselves. Put another way, the perturbative framework that physicists used in deriving the requirement of a 10-dimensional spacetime assumed from the outset that the heterotic E coupling constant is small. Although it was not recognized until much later, this implicitly enforced two mutually consistent approximations, that the width of the membrane is small, making it look like a string, and that the 11th dimension is so small that it is beyond the sensitivity of the perturbative equations. Within this approximation scheme, we are led to envision a 10-dimensional universe filled with one-dimensional strings. Now we see that this is but an approximation to an 11-dimensional universe containing two-dimensional membranes. For technical reasons, Witten first came upon the 11th dimension in his studies of the strong coupling properties of the type 2A string, and there the story is quite similar. As in the heterotic E example, there is an 11th dimension whose size is controlled by the type 2A coupling constant. When its value is increased, the new dimension grows. As it does, Witten argued, the type 2A string, rather than stretching into a ribbon as in the heterotic E case, expands into an inner tube shape. Once again, Witten argued that although theorists have always viewed type 2A strings as one-dimensional objects, having only length but no thickness, this view is a reflection of the perturbative approximation scheme in which the string coupling constant is assumed to be small. If nature does require a small value of this coupling constant, then it is a trustworthy approximation. Nevertheless, Witten's arguments and those of other physicists during the second superstring revolution do give strong evidence that the type 2A and heterotic E strings are, fundamentally, two-dimensional membranes living in an 11-dimensional universe. But what is this 11-dimensional theory? At low energies, low compared to the Planck energy, Witten and others argued it is approximated by the long-neglected 11-dimensional supergravity quantum field theory. But for higher energies, how can we describe this theory? This topic is currently under intense scrutiny. We know that the 11-dimensional theory contains two-dimensional extended objects, two-dimensional membranes. And as we shall soon discuss, extended objects of other dimensions play an important role as well. But beyond a hodgepodge of properties, no one knows what this 11-dimensional theory is. Are membranes its fundamental ingredients? What are its defining properties? How does it purport to make contact with physics as we know it? If the respective coupling constants are small, our best current answers to these questions are described in previous chapters, since at small coupling constants, we are led back to the theory of strings. But if the coupling constants are not small, no one currently knows the answers. Whatever the 11-dimensional theory is, Witten has provisionally named it M-theory. The name stands for as many things as people you poll. Some samples: mystery theory, mother theory, as in mother of all theories, membrane theory, since whatever it is, membranes seem to be part of the story, matrix theory, after some recent work by Tom Banks of Rutgers University, Willie Fischler of the University of Texas at Austin, Stephen Schenker of Rutgers University, and Susskind that offers a novel interpretation of the theory. But even without having a firm grasp on its name or its properties, it is already clear that M-theory provides a unifying substrate for pulling together all five string theories. M-theory and the web of interconnections. There is an old proverb about three blind men and an elephant. The first blind man grabs hold of the elephant's ivory tusk and describes the smooth, hard surface that he feels. The second blind man grabs hold of one of the elephant's legs. He describes the tough, muscular girth that he feels. The third blind man grabs hold of the elephant's tail and describes the slender and sinewy appendage that he feels. Since their mutual descriptions are so different, and since none of the men can see the others, each thinks that he has grabbed hold of a different animal. For many years, physicists were as much in the dark as the blind men, thinking that the different string theories were very different. But now, through the insights of the second superstring revolution, physicists have realized that M-theory is the unifying pachyderm of the five string theories. In this chapter, we have discussed changes in our understanding of string theory that arise when we venture beyond the domain of the perturbative framework, a framework implicitly in use prior to this chapter. Recall the large-small circular radius duality that interchanges a circular dimension of radius r with one whose radius is 1 over r. Previously, we glossed over one aspect of this duality, which we now must clarify. In Chapter 10, we discuss the properties of strings in a universe with a circular dimension without carefully specifying which of the five string formulations we were working with. We argued that the interchange of winding and vibration modes of a string allows us to rephrase exactly the string theoretic description of a universe with a circular dimension of radius 1 over r in terms of one in which the radius is r. The point we glossed over is that the type 2a and type 2b string theories actually get exchanged by this duality, as do the heterotic O and heterotic E strings. That is, the more precise statement of the large-small radius duality is this. The physics of the type 2a string in a universe with a circular dimension of radius r is absolutely identical to the physics of the type 2b string in a universe with a circular dimension of radius 1 over r. A similar statement holds for the heterotic E and heterotic O strings. This refinement of the large-small radius duality has no significant effect on the conclusions of Chapter 10, but it does have an important impact on the present discussion. The reason is that by providing a link between the type 2a and type 2b string theories, as well as between the heterotic O and heterotic E theories, the large-small radius duality completes the web of connections. All five string theories, together with M-theory, are dual to one another. They are all sewn together into a single theoretical framework. They provide five different approaches to describing one and the same underlying physics. For some or other application, one phrasing may be far more effective than another. For instance, it's far easier to work with the weakly coupled heterotic O theory than it is to work with the strongly coupled type 1 string. Nevertheless, they describe exactly the same physics. The overall picture. Prior to 1995, without taking any dualities into account, we had five apparently distinct string theories. Various physicists worked on each, but without an understanding of the dualities, they appeared to be different theories. Each of the theories had variable features such as the size of their coupling constant and the geometrical form and sizes of curled-up dimensions. The hope was, and still is, that these defining properties would be determined by the theory itself, but without the ability to determine them with the current approximate equations, physicists have naturally studied the physics that follows from a range of possibilities, each of which denotes one specific choice for the coupling constant and the curled-up geometry, without invoking any dualities, we still have 5 disjointed collections of theories. But now, if we apply all of the dualities we have discussed, then as we vary the coupling and geometric parameters, we can pass from any one theory to any other, so long as we also include the unifying central region of M-theory. Even though we have only a scant understanding of M-theory, these indirect arguments lend strong support to the claim that it provides a unifying substrate for our 5 naively distinct string theories. Moreover, we have learned that M-theory is closely related to yet a 6th theory, 11-dimensional supergravity. M-theory is the theoretical elephant that has opened the eyes of string theorists to a far grander unifying framework. A surprising feature of M-theory, democracy in extension. Imagine that M-theory is depicted as a 6-armed starfish shape, in which the peninsular arms represent the 5 distinct theories discussed so far, plus 11-dimensional supergravity. When the string coupling constant is small in any of the 5 string theory peninsular regions of the theory map, the fundamental ingredient of the theory appears to be a 1-dimensional string. We have, however, just gained a new perspective on this observation. If we start in either the heterotic E or type 2A regions and turn the value of the respective string coupling constants up, we migrate toward the center of the M-theory shape, and what appear to be 1-dimensional strings stretch into 2-dimensional membranes. Moreover, through a more or less intricate sequence of duality relations involving both the string coupling constants and the detailed form of the curled-up spatial dimensions, we can smoothly and continuously move from any point to any other. Since the 2-dimensional membranes we have come upon from the heterotic E and type 2A perspectives can be followed as we migrate to any of the 3 other string formulations, we learn that each of the 5 string formulations involves 2-dimensional membranes as well. This raises 2 questions. First, are 2-dimensional membranes the true fundamental ingredient of string theory? And second, having made the bold leap in the 1970s and early 1980s from 0-dimensional point particles to 1-dimensional strings, and having now seen that string theory actually involves 2-dimensional membranes, might it be that there are even higher dimensional ingredients in the theory as well? As of this writing, the answers to these questions are not fully known, but the situation appears to be the following. We relied heavily on supersymmetry to give us some understanding of each formulation of string theory beyond the domain of validity of perturbative approximation methods. In particular, the properties of BPS states, their masses and their force charges, are uniquely determined by supersymmetry, and this allowed us to understand some of their strongly coupled characteristics without having to perform direct calculations of unimaginable difficulty. In fact, through the initial efforts of Horowitz and Strominger, and through subsequent groundbreaking work of Polchinski, we now know even more about these BPS states. In particular, not only do we know their masses and the force charges they carry, but we also have a clear understanding of what they look like. And the picture is, perhaps, the most surprising development of all. Some of the BPS states are 1-dimensional strings, others are 2-dimensional membranes. By now, these shapes are familiar. But the surprise is that yet others are 3-dimensional, 4-dimensional. In fact, the range of possibilities encompasses every spatial dimension up to and including 9. String theory, or M-theory, or whatever it is finally called, actually contains extended objects of a whole slew of different spatial dimensions. Physicists have coined the term 3-brain to describe extended objects with 3 spatial dimensions, 4-brain for those with 4 spatial dimensions, and so on, up to 9 brains. And, more generally, for an object with p space dimensions, where p represents a whole number, physicists have coined the far-from-euphonious terminology p-brain. Sometimes, using this terminology, strings are described as one brains and membranes as two brains. The fact that all of these extended objects are actually part of the theory has led Paul Townsend to declare a democracy of brains. Notwithstanding brain democracy, strings, one-dimensional extended objects, are special for the following reason. Physicists have shown that the mass of the extended objects of every dimension except for one-dimensional strings is inversely proportional to the value of the associated string coupling constant when we are in any of the five string regions of our imaginary diagram.